This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's rock and roll comedian Don Jameson. You're listening to the Cobras and Fire podcast. Rock is not dead. No, it's not. I don't care what Gene Simmons said. Rock is not dead. It's very alive. So pay attention and crank it up.
Here's what I love. I love when they've combined now alcohol with things you would never normally do. Like, you ever see these wine and painting classes? Yeah, nobody here ever had the urge to be a fucking painter. You open a fucking few bottles of wine, all of a sudden you're Andy Warhol, right? I have a doggy daycare center in my neighborhood, just got their liquor license. I immediately adopted two rescue pups. Honey, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm an animal lover. And if you don't drink, that's fine. Just don't preach to me, right? That's all I ask, man. I had a friend come up to me and goes, dude, you should quit drinking. At least I don't wake up with a headache every morning. I'm like, I don't either. I'm a comedian. I sleep till 12:30 in the afternoon. I beat the system, motherfucker. You know, give me fucking six Bud Lights. Dilly dilly. Let's go. Right.
You're listening to the Cobras and Fire podcast featuring special guest from That Metal Show, rock and roll comedian Don Jameson. Strap in, bitches.
When you are, man.
All right. I'd like to welcome back to the program comedian Don Jameson. He's got a new album coming out, Denim and Laughter, on Metal Blade Records. Don, welcome back.
Good to be back. And yeah, the album is out now. So stream it on Apple Music or download it on iTunes or Spotify, or God forbid, you come see me live and pick up a physical copy on CD and soon vinyl.
Ooh, nice. You know, yeah. Don, that's all well and good, but we need to get right to the point that people really want to hear from you. And are you ready to lay out your plan for how you're going to stop the spread of the coronavirus?
I'm just going about my day just like any other day. I don't understand what this coronavirus is. Like, every channel is a coronavirus channel now. You know what I mean? The local news, coronavirus. You put on CNN or Fox, coronavirus. You got Naked and Afraid, coronavirus edition. I mean, I can't take it anymore.
I'm looking forward to that edition of Naked and Afraid.
You know what? Elizabeth Warren told me, good way to combat the coronavirus is just have yourself a cold beer.
Well, I'll do that right now if it's okay.
Absolutely. I certainly don't want you to get sick in the middle of this interview.
Correct, yeah. And back at you. You know, no joke, this morning I heard, I haven't quite dug down the rabbit hole. I plan to do that very soon, but apparently there is coronavirus porn out there.
Oh, God, you just made my day. All right. So, yeah. Now, here's another type of weird porn I got to get into.
Yeah, it's like, we need to wear protection. I don't like rubbers. And then they put on, not talking about rubbers, and then they put on the mask. You know, maybe have like a glory hole mask.
Yeah.
So they can still perform, you know, the oral work and it with. I don't know. I'm trying to dance around the obvious here. Yeah, give a blowjob with a goddamn mask on. How do you pull that off?
Well, I mean, even better than that, you just gave me, a great Valentine's gift idea for next year.
Oh, nice.
That coronavirus blowjob mask. Honey, this means I love you. You know. Got to do the right things to the one, you know, for the ones that you love.
You got to get them in the mood.
Oh, geez, that's where the beer comes in.
Yeah, it's like, you know, some couple naked people in Ground Zero Wuhan. Streets are empty and they're just banging. I don't know. I'm gonna have to hit YouPorn when we're done here and do a little more research. But yeah, I heard it on the radio this morning. They played some clip and I'm like, you know, I wonder if Don has watched any coronavirus porn, but anyway.
Well, it's for research purposes only.
Okay.
So I just want people to know that. Yeah.
Of course, yeah. Exactly. If anything else happens, it's just merely coincidence. But.
Well, I always do research with a box of Kleenex and some hand lotion near me.
Well, one of the new things you have going on is the that Jameson show.
Yeah, I do my own little version of that metal show over there on compoundmedia.com, and just trying to keep the spirit alive a little, like Tony Iommi, kept the Black Sabbath name going with all those years where he had, like, you know, the 19 different singers. And you kind of wondered, like, well, why is he still calling this Black Sabbath? I mean, but then you saw what happened. You know, Ronnie came back eventually and Ozzy came back. So, you know, just trying to keep the spirit of what Eddie and Jim and I did alive. You know, those guys have shows on Sirius XM where they're doing their thing. And, you know, I found a nice home for what I want to do. And it's a cool video cast. So if people want to check it out, you know, there's some episodes also up on YouTube, so just type in that Jameson show, and you could see what the hell I'm up to.
Does you consider that a podcast, or?
I guess it would be called a video cast.
Okay.
So, but yeah, it's an hour show, and obviously I talked to a bunch of rockers on there, and I have comedians on and stuff like that. So, it's a little bit more than well rounded than what we did on that metal show, but again, it's the same kind of spirit. Mm-hmm. And you know, obviously the three of us still great friends. You know, Jim and Eddie have both been on the show, so until if and when that metal show comes back, that's what I'll be doing.
And also if you kind of go through the archives, you can catch a dramatic reading of the Kiss classic Fits Like a Glove.
Hornet's nest, lay me down to rest. I want to shed my skin. I got the urge to merge. Okay, you're cold as ice, baby. Won't you let me in?
Yes, you've been doing your homework, I see. Oh, boy, you've been doing a lot of research this week.
It's not just porn,
Jameson,
man.
Jameson show, coronavirus porn. Yeah, I like an interviewer who prepares. Yes, and Joanne Nozaczynski is going to come, who has a show on the same network. She's going to come back this coming week and do Saxon's Denim and Leather, because I figured, obviously, that would be fitting. Considering I just put out Denim and Laughter. So, we'll look for Joanne to do some more of those fun readings of classic metal lyrics.
Do you like the term hornet's nest as a way to reference the vagina?
I never heard that one.
I think it's in Fits Like a Glove. Maybe I have my Kiss songs wrong, but...
Hornet's
nest, baby, let me rest.
I thought Fits Like a Glove, because I really wanted her to read the line, I'm going to put my log in your fireplace.
Burn, but bitch, burn.
It from Burn, Bitch, Burn. Yeah, so I got that wrong. So we'll she'll come back and do Burn, Bitch, Burn, because those are great lyrics. Gene, no Bob Dylan, that's for sure. But
thank God, actually, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, exactly. Gene knows exactly where his wheelhouse is. So yeah, God bless, man. I've been a Kiss fan since I'm 11, and always will be.
Have you caught him on the End of the Road tour at all?
I have not, and that's not because I don't want to go. It just, you know, the times they've been near me, I've been away, but I will get to one before it's all over. And if I don't see, you know, this End of the Road tour, I'll see the End of the Road tour too.
Yeah, I'm looking. I'm holding out for that one. You know, I wasn't gonna ask this, but you reminded me of something because I ended up catching. It had to be last summer. But the Dio hologram tour. Did you catch the Hollow Dio thing at all?
I love the Dio hologram tour. I'm big into this hologram stuff, man. Because I'm becoming good friends with the company, the guy that owns the company that does it. Because, you know, I figure maybe, you know, like if he has a little extra hologram laying around, like after he gets done with the Dio one, like maybe he could do a Jameson hologram and then I never have to leave my house and I could just tell jokes all over the world via the Don Jameson hologram. That'd be so great.
You know, do you think more like maybe Vince Neil should be using a hologram or, you know, you can kind of slim him down a little bit or anything like that? There'd be a lot of kind of these aging rockers could kind of preserve some of their youthful integrity, you know, if they took advantage, don't you think?
Well, that's the thing, too, is like, you know, all we talk about these farewell tours, which are never farewell tours, right? We all know this at this point.
Yeah.
Nobody's fooling us. And now it's like it's not only don't you retire, even if you die, you don't retire. You know, they'll just make a hologram of you and then put you right back out on tour. So I think it's a cool thing. I think the technology's great, and not just the video portion of it. It's the audio that was really amazing to me, especially with Ronnie, because, you know, out of whatever it was, 16 songs, you know, they were taken from different years and different countries and on different recording equipment, and it all sounded seamless. So, you know, that's a big part of it as well. And then, of course, you got the live singers on stage and the live band and all that. Man, I think it's a cool thing. So for people who, you know, I know there's naysayers out there, but if you can, you know, go check it out, man. I've seen that one. I've seen Frank Zappa, and I like both of them, man. I thought they were cool.
Full disclosure, I am one of the naysayers. We've talked about it on the show quite a bit. But I did go check it out. I don't think the technology is quite there yet. I didn't think the hologram, it didn't pop or impress me as much as I was expecting the visual aspect of it. I'll admit the band was really good.
Cool. Yeah, well, listen, I mean, and it might not be for everybody. I get that, you know, but I'm just, like I said, I'm digging it. And believe me, I'm an old school guy. You know, I didn't think I would enjoy it as much as I did. And the weird one, the weird thing was going to see the Frank Zappa one, and I was sitting next to his son, Amit, during the show, which is like, I'm watching him watch his dead dad on stage. Oh. So that had an extra kind of layer to that show.
That would fuck with me, man.
Oh, it did, man. It did.
So now, there's another host of this show that when we're not doing interviews, it's the two of us. He's all for it like you are. He's full on board. He supports it. He thinks it should be done more. So it's whatever. It is like you said, maybe it's just not for everybody. But, you know, I did take the time to go out and check it out. I'm not trying to convince people against it other than when I say I'm against it and so should you be.
Right. Okay. Listen, Baco, you've done your research. You are a very thorough music lover, and again, I appreciate that.
Well, maybe you'll appreciate this, unless IMDb is wrong, but were you actually in Pauly Shore's Dead?
Yes, I am in it. Don't blink. I do have a line. It's myself and Kurt Loder from MTV together. That was, you know, we did a scene together. Not exactly De Niro and Pacino, but, I did do a small part. I've known Pauly for 30 years. I've done a couple things with Pauly, and I like Pauly. He gets a bad rap, but he's actually a really good dude, man.
I'm actually with you. I think he's funny. I've always liked him. And I might be one of the only people to say this, but I love that movie. I bought it.
I think it's a hysterical movie, and you know, I was also an associate producer on it. You know, I did the post production with the editor on it, and you got to see all the scenes that got cut out are like, there was like 30 other celebrity cameos that got cut out of that movie. So, I mean, what you're seeing in there was only the tip of the iceberg. But yeah, it was a funny concept because, you know, Paulie got to a point where he realized, you know, look, it's not the MTV era anymore. I'm not the really, you know, people don't know me as the Weasel anymore. And it was a great idea to sort of make fun of himself and say, well, I'll fake my own death so people like me again. And it was a really great premise for the movie. And, I mean, he got Sean Penn to be in it. He got a million people to be in it. So,
yeah.
You know, he did a good job. I'm glad you liked that one, man. It's a cool movie.
I'm going to have to dig it out of my collection just to kind of spot you. Do you have a rough idea whereabouts in the movie, early, middle, end?
It's, you know what? It's right after... like the news gets out that Pauly Shore was dead, and so it's towards the beginning, like the first third
of
the movie.
And that's what Kurt Loder's reporting on. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, Kurt Loder's reporting on it, and then I sort of, you know, it's like they're like, I yell cut, and then I kind of come in, and Kurt and I have a word back and forth. He said something, you know, about Pauly, like, who cares or whatever, and I go, come on, the dude's a legend, you know, something like that.
Okay.
So, It's very quick, Paulie's good people, man.
Have you done much writing that ended up with our television or movies or anything like that?
Well, yeah, I wrote for a ton of the Comedy Central roasts, and I wrote on the Gene Simmons roast, you know, when he was doing the Family Jewels, and yeah, I've done a bunch of stuff, man. Done a bunch of stuff behind the scenes. The Trump roast, which they still air that Trump roast once in a while, Comedy Central, because I was in the audience for that one. I always get calls like, because now that he's obviously he wasn't president then.
Right.
It was like, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, and so people are like, oh my God, I didn't know there was a Donald Trump roast, and you were there. I go, yeah, I wrote some of the mean, nasty stuff about him.
But do you remember any of it?
No.
Okay. That's great.
Too many coronavirus curing beers since then.
You got you're kind of focused only on the coronavirus humor at this point, but
I'm locked in, baby.
All right. I did want to ask you about Dee Snider. He's got a petition to get. He basically wants AC/DC, I think, to play the Super Bowl halftime show. He's kind of, you know, gone pretty vocal on this for some time. And you know, at least going back to when they announced J-Lo and Shakira, but this kind of comes up every year when they announce it, that somebody in the Hard Rock community, you know, tends to get on their soapbox and kind of wants an answer as to why this isn't happening. What is your take? Do you think this is a good idea to bring in kind of like one of the iconic rock or metal bands? Because to me, it could be kind of a bad move because of what the event actually is.
I mean, look, and on my album, you know, I have a track where I kind of address this. So that to me is my final statement. You know, I'm still traumatized by Adam Levine's nipples. So that was kind of my little manifesto on the new comedy CD. But
can you touch on the topic at all?
Well, I don't want to touch on the topic because the topic is Adam Levine's nipples, and I don't care to touch them.
Mm.
Although many, many, many women do care too, and probably a lot of men as well, but I wouldn't be included as one of them. But now people could hear it on the album. But as far as what Dee's doing, Dee is such a passionate dude.
Sure.
And, you know, like you know how earnest he is about doing this. And of course, he picked the perfect band to do it. I mean, you know, like babies come out of their mother's wombs, and they already know who AC/DC is. You know, 97-year-old great-great-great-grandparents know who AC/DC is. So that's, you know, that's a no-brainer right there. Everybody knows Back in Black. Everybody knows Thunderstruck. So if there's a band that you're going to do it with, that's probably the band to do it with. And, you know, I think he's going to need... I think he's got like 30,000 signatures. I think he's going to need 30 million to make the NFL even respond to that. But, yeah, we'll see what happens, man. Of course, you wouldn't want to see For Those About to Rock and the cannons going off and all that shit, man. That'd be killer.
And for me, I think, you know, like, if you look back at kind of the heyday of metal, it seemed like we accepted the idea that we weren't for everybody because they just didn't fucking get it. And now it seems like we want to be pulled into this world that of lip syncing and kind of glamour and boom and bop. Honestly, my personal opinion is don't do it at all. Like, nobody. Show fucking the first half highlights like you do at a normal game. Go to the second half. I really don't need it at all. But that, you know, because I think about like when the Rolling Stones did it, or The Who, or even Prince, more rock-centric artists that actually did a pretty solid, you know, live performance. They got kind of shredded a little bit. I mean, at least the reaction was mixed. And basically what it comes down to is that you're not really going to please anybody. And if you're going to force people to lip sync, I'd kind of prefer some of my heroes not be involved in that, I guess. But
okay, well, I'm totally down with what you're saying. And look, at this point, you know, the Super Bowl halftime show has basically just become, you know, like a 25-minute block of time where you could drop a deuce and then get back for the game. That's really what it's become.
I haven't watched it in a couple of years. So, hey, to your point, if AC/DC was on it next year, I would be paying attention. Or Metallica would be another one that gets thrown out there that's big enough. But even the Foo Fighters, fuck it, throw them out there. For the most part, if they're just going to lip sync anyway, I don't really care. I it wasn't that great when the Chili Peppers showed up and their instruments weren't plugged in. It just, I don't know.
Well, then they always got to shoehorn in like a pop star or something, you know, to balance it out, which is like, no, let's, you know what, you want Aerosmith to play the Super Bowl halftime show, let them go up there and play live, or Metallica, you know, when Metallica did the Grammys last year, they had the Crowbar in, Lady Gaga, you know, I understand she is a legit fan of hard rock and metal, to what degree, I'm not sure, but it's like, can we have freaking 4 minutes to ourselves for once? You got a crowbar in Post Malone on everything? Come on.
My lord. Yeah, are you referencing the new Ozzy? They collaborated, and plus he's on Ozzy's new record.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's kind of the go-to guy these days, you know. He's the guy now that everybody wants to, you know, have his fancy face tattoos, you know.
What a look, huh?
Yeah, now he's saying, you know, he's saying on social media, he goes, yeah, it's, you know, I think it's because of my, you know, my negative body image and stuff. Like, I don't want to hear that. I want rock stars. I want Steven Tyler shooting up eight balls. That's what I want. I don't want to hear about, I have negative body images. Wah!
You don't want that college roommate that got his face drawn on while he was passed out?
Oh, that happens all the time.
Well, right,
that's
what he looks like, though. He's like that kind of doofus guy that like always passed out at the wrong time.
Yeah, like he passed out on the Faster Pussycat tour bus, and he walked off into the hotel, and the people behind the counter were like, "Oh my God, look at that guy's face!" But he never washed it off.
He went right to the tattoo parlor and said, "Make this shit permanent."
Exactly.
Oh, man. Hey, I got a semi-serious question for you. Semi-serious because, let's face it, we're not talking about anything that matters. We call ourselves a comedy rock podcast, but neither one of us have ever done stand-up or done any, like, professional writing on that. So my question for you is, at what point, what's the criteria where someone can actually call themselves a comedian?
I think getting paid for it.
Okay.
I would say, yeah, that's where you could say, you know, I'm a comedian. If you're not, you say, yeah, you know, I do comedy on the side, you know, I'm trying to break in, or I do it as a hobby or whatever. But yeah, I mean, to say, look, I'm a comedian. Yeah, I think you gotta at least have been paid for it at least once.
So it's not you needed to have done some stand up because you could be a comic writer and still be a comedian as long as you're being paid in your book.
No, you're a comedy writer.
Okay, see, so stand up has to be part of the process.
Well, if you want to say you're a comedian or a comic, yeah, you have had to get paid, because I know guys who are still out there doing, they've been doing open mics for 20 years.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say they're comics. I'd say they're people who like to write and go up and perform stuff, but they, you know, obviously they're not taking it seriously enough to,
right,
to, you know, make a career choice on it. But yeah, if you can look, if you can go out and get paid to do it, and I believe me, I've seen some people way worse than me go out and get paid to do it. So,
me like who? Who are you talking about?
Oh well, nobody you would know. But that, but honestly, the guy.
Well, I thought you were going to say Dane Cook, but no.
No. Dane Cook is. Yeah, I wish I had his bank account.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, my real inspiration in comedy, because a lot of people say, well, you know, what comics influenced you? And you know, and sure, it, you know, Carlin, Dice, Richard Pryor, you know, all the standard answers. But the guy who really inspired me was when I used to go to gigs with Florentine, just to hang out and just, you know, pal around. And the first time I ever went to a gig with him, the MC went up, and he had a complete zero for 15 minutes. It was silent in the room. He walked off stage, went right up to the owner. I saw the guy counting out cash into his hand. Guy went right next door to the strip club, and I'm like, I could suck that bad and get paid. And that's really what inspired me to do comedy.
It's kind of like how Kiss inspired me to pursue music.
I don't know. That's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah,
but all right.
Yeah. No, actually, I'm, by the way, I'm a huge Kiss fan.
Yeah, yeah. Now, look, and we all make fun. You know, I mean, I do it on my albums. We make fun of the people and, you know, definitely the bands that we love the most. I mean, you know, if you watch That Metal Show, you know, Jim and I were constantly on the attack with Eddie, but that's because we love him. You know, that's how we show affection in New Jersey.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, hey, if you're not, we like to say we make fun of the people we love, but, you know, whatever. It's typically a term of endearment. Sometimes it's not.
Yeah, yeah. No, look, you know, Jim and Eddie and I, and we still get together, and, you know, when we see each other, I'll go, Eddie, that jacket's awful, and then he'll tell Jim, dyeing your hair now? And then they'll both say, my sideburns are terrible, and now let's go get a beer. You know, now that we got the insulting out of the way, let's go have a beer and hang out.
You know, with That Metal Show, I mean, it's probably a done deal at this point. I mean, I don't know any of the behind-the-scenes stuff unless you want to tell me something, but it's also hard to find streaming. Like, I think VH or MTV Classic or whatever has it, but yet you have to, I don't know, pay per episode or something. Last time I looked into it anyway, it'd be nice if some of that, those back episodes are just kind of out there for people to just check out, like throw it up on YouTube or something. I realize you probably have no control over that. I'm just sharing an idea.
I agree. They, for whatever reason, they sell the last season we ever did, season 14, on iTunes, okay. And I think on YouTube you could buy the shows. But yeah, I don't know, man. It's an anomaly. You know, I always say, look, we've got to give us credit. You know, we know how to get a show canceled, man. We take down the whole network and everybody with us. So.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot it.
No
remnants right
left.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I assume you get asked about it a lot. That's got to kind of feel good, right? That you had that big of an impact. I mean, it was must-see TV in my house.
Yeah, thanks, man. Of course. I mean, we know because we're people who love hard rock and metal, and those are the most loyal fans in the world. It's just like I have never forgotten about Headbangers Ball, you know.
Oh,
and Ricky even tells me to this day, he's like, DJ, I can't believe, of all the things I've done in my career, and, you know, and even after I cut my hair, he goes, to this day, this thing I still get, you know, asked about the most is Headbangers Ball. And I go, yeah, that's the fans of this music. We know that because we are those people. So once people, you know, that's why we always said when we did That Metal Show, it's got to be like just honest talk, just like, you know, the three of us are just hanging out backstage, sitting on some road cases. And, you know, because, you know, metal fans, they're good, man. They could sniff out phoniness, man. So we were just like, we just got to do it this way. And, yeah, grateful people are still asking about it, man.
And you guys kept it pretty, I don't know what the right way to say is. You didn't really change too much that was working. You know what I mean? You kind of kept a pretty good integrity to the way you approached it every week.
Oh yeah, thanks. You know, the core of it was the chemistry with the three of us.
Of course.
And that took a little while to to gel, even though we were all friends previously. But you'd have these creative meetings with the network, and they'd go, you know, come up with 50 new ideas for next season, and then, you know, and then we'd all get together with our papers and go through, and then, like, you know, maybe one of them would be, you know, good, and we, you know, work that in. And so, yeah, I mean, we tried to keep the segments people really loved, and then we tried to kind of, you know, put some stuff in there. And we tried a few things over the years that just didn't work, so we just did them once. But I'm proud of the work that we did, man. And if we never do it again, we had a good run. And, you know, it's 2020 is the year of the Rock reunion, so you know, be cool to be a part of that.
No shit. And by the way, everybody's on tour. Did you notice that?
Yeah, it's gonna be a huge summer. So
every band is announced. Like, I mean, I don't know. Whatever. It's crazy.
Yeah, I know. People are really gonna have to, you know, make a choice, and it's you know, especially hard rock and metal heavy this summer. So,
definitely.
But you know, nobody going to see Korn and Faith No More are going to go see Motley Crue and Poison. I mean, those are, you know, I would, but, you know,
I know what you're
most
saying.
Of those audience will be different.
Yeah. What do you think about that Motley Lep stadium tour? They kind of talked about these very fast sellouts, but the reality was those tickets sold to Ticket King and StubHub, and they're all, you know, they were available there.
That's the business model now.
Yeah,
I don't sort of get involved with that stuff, but yeah, I don't know. You know, the Metallica, I think, got in a little trouble with that, like where they sort of bought a whole bunch and then they were putting on a secondary market and all this stuff. I don't know. If I see a show, I just go to it. I don't know who's getting the money, whatever. How much is it? All right, I'll pay this much to go see this band or whatever, or I won't.
Well, maybe a better question for you, because, yeah, that is kind of the business side of stuff. With Motley Crue, they were the one band that I thought, like, I was actually a little surprised when they came back for a myriad of reasons, but nobody tried harder to say this really is it. And it was only 4 years later that they come back. That's a bit
right.
Rough.
So Twisted Sister, they'll be back, what, 2022 then? And Slayer 2025-ish, end of 2024, beginning of 25.
As album cycles get further and further apart, the reunion cycles get, the downtime shrinks. Is that what's happening now?
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know, I mean, look, the Judas Priest tried to do it, the Scorpions have tried to do it, everyone's tried to do it, and nobody's done it. So those Twisted is on the clock, and Slayer's on the clock, and just like I told Nick Mars on that metal show, you guys are on the clock right now. You will be back. I wasn't saying it to be a dick, and because I thought that he was lying. I honestly felt that they felt that they were done. You know, a lot of those guys don't even get along in that band. You know, it's like, all right, let's just call it a day. We just did this massive tour with Alice Cooper. It's over. But then you're home for a year or two, and you start going, it's fun playing in front of 30,000 people, and you get the itch again. It's, you know, if you could still do it, why not? You know, athletes get too old to do it. You know, no athlete wants to quit, but it's like, you know, you can't play linebacker at 63 years old. It's just not physically possible. But you know, if you can get Twisted Sister back on stage, I mean, Dee Snider's got six pack abs. I haven't had six pack abs since I'm 11. I mean, the guy's still in shape. He can still sing. You know, why is he doing petitions? Get that band back on the road, Dee. Come on.
Yeah, I will give the Scorpions and Judas Priest, a couple bands you mentioned there, a little bit of credit, because in the midst of their farewell tour, they said, you know what? No, we're just going to keep going.
They realized it early.
Yeah, they didn't they didn't sign a contract, and I don't know. Look, it doesn't really matter when it comes down to it. I get that, and yeah, but I got a feeling you're probably not going to give me you're probably not going to want to get into this. But to me, I think there are signs that some of these guys can't do it anymore. Like you talked about a linebacker at 63. I'm going to be very curious to see what kind of shape Vince comes out in, because he hasn't really been at the top of his game for a couple decades. And to be blunt, I just and Mick Mars, you know, I mean, God bless him, because he's an icon in my eyes. But he just, you know, he's not really getting younger. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, the thing with Mick, the impression that I got, and, you know, I only met him and hung with him the one time when he came to do the show. And he's a real sweetheart of a guy. I hate to ruin the kind of mystique of, you know, because he's really never interviewed, so he kind of has this image of being like kind of this dark wizard type of guy. But he really is a really down to earth sweet guy. But I get the sense with Mick, which is that, you know, if he can get onto the stage, you know, that's all he cares about. Like, yeah, that's a guy who just wants to play, you know. Like, get me up there on the stage in front of my mic, plug my guitar in, and that's, you know, I could see Mick, like, one of those guys, like, you know, where'd be the ultimate place to die would be on stage, because at least he'd go out, you know, knowing that he was playing. So, a guy like Vince, I don't know, you know, Vince is committed, man. You know, when they were doing Motley, he'd be off tour for 2 days. He'd be out with a solo band playing again. So I don't know. You know, I don't know if the weight's the problem. I'm not sure. You know, there's plenty of fat guys who can sing. I mean, Pavarotti, you know, had no problem, right? So yeah. It could be other stuff that's not, you know, maybe he's just not taking care of himself in other ways, shall we
Certainly,
say.
Certainly, yeah. It seems like his voice has kind of been gone, and I'm not just talking about the taking a lot of breaths between words and that kind of thing. It just doesn't sound quite the same as it, you know, it should, you know. And I would say Paul Stanley is in that camp right now. As much shit as he's talked about Ace and Peter not being able to do the gig, I think it shows some balls that he's out there. And I'm not trying to drag you into this, Don. I'm just saying that I think some of these guys have kind of pushed it a little bit past the if you can still do it line.
Right, and so if this is the end of the road, which they're already walking it back by saying, well, no, there'll be more shows. Everything's on a technicality. But, yeah, to me, you know, I think Paul's lost a little off his fastball, and that's all right. You know, when you're in your 60s, I mean, that happens sometimes. And then you have guys like Ronnie Dio, who was, what, 67, 68 when he passed away, and his voice was still kicking. So sometimes it's the luck of the draw or genetics, or I'm not sure. You know, some guys take great care of their voice and they still lose it, and other guys smoke and, you know, drink and don't take care of themselves, and they just have this gift. I mean, that Glenn Hughes can still sing like he can sing.
Amazing.
From all those years in the 70s and 80s of just doing insane, insane, insane amounts of cocaine, that guy can sing like Aretha Franklin today, like in his mid to late 60s, is ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, boy, the pipes on that fucking dude, man. And I wasn't taking a shot at Paul. Because, you know, I'm want to do that if I feel like it, but because he's just delivered for so long. He's one of the greatest voices in rock. He is up there. It's just a reality, is all I'm getting at.
Absolutely, and I'm not disagreeing with you. Like I said, I think Paul has lost a little off the fastball.
Yep.
You know, when I saw the Zeppelin that O2 concert that the film they put out in 2007. That was like Robert Plant, you know, same thing. He lost a little off his fastball, but when he needed it, when he needed to throw a 95-mile-an-hour heater, he could do it.
Yeah.
But you could tell he was throwing more change-ups, some off-speed stuff a lot of the times. But when he really needed it, when he really needed that 95-mile-an-hour fastball, he had it. He couldn't throw it 20 times a game, but he could throw it 5 times a game. And when he picked the spots, he nailed it. So, you know, I just talk for a living. You know, I've never had a vocal problem, luckily. But like I said, sometimes it just seems really friggin' random.
No, I'm with you there, yeah. Because, it was nice, shit, you know, Ozzy seemed to lose it in the late 90s, and same with Brian Johnson. Then all of a sudden, like, in the mid to late 2000s, they had a couple studio releases. It was like they were reborn almost. So it was almost like there is a way to kind of rest and recover. I was really, you know, I was hopeful that was going to happen with Paul. But, you know, I mean, so far we haven't seen that, but who knows?
Yeah, and I saw Vince with his solo band not this past summer, but the summer before at a festival out in Kansas City that I go to every year, and he played a set. He sounded great. So,
what do you think of that drummer he has from the Slaughter drummer, Zoltan?
Zoltan, yeah. He's amazing. I love him, man. He's such a he's so opposite of that off stage. I mean,
really?
The guy on stage is completely insane. Yeah, with all that stuff jumping off the tops of the speakers and crashing his cymbals and playing with his feet and behind his back, and then the guy offstage is so quiet. He doesn't drink. He never done drugs. He's a family guy. You know, his wife goes everywhere with him. You know, I think he's religious. Like, it's just
wow.
It's such an opposite guy offstage. Yeah, he's a really cool dude.
Yeah, if people don't know what we're talking about, just check out Zoltan. Slaughter drummer.
Chaney.
Yeah, Zoltan Chaney, there you go. Just Google that, watch a couple of videos, and the guy doesn't miss a beat. You know, that's the most amazing thing, is that during all this, it's like, you know, they're not, like, lagging on time on the song or anything like that.
Right, no, I know. I'm always mystified when I see him play, because you're right, he keeps the beat. And, yeah, it's the Slaughter Band is Vince's solo band as well, so they do a lot of double bills together.
Yeah.
And, so you get a double dose of Zoltan there. But, yeah, he's part of the reason you watch the show. I mean, he's a focal point.
You know, when it comes to Vince, he's pretty much the main point for me, but largely because Vince doesn't really do much with his set list. He's kind of – I've seen him, I don't know, about a half a dozen times as a solo artist, and it's been pretty much the same kind of song, so I always look forward to watching Zoltan.
Yeah, yeah, no, again, and a killer guy, man. So,
cool.
You know, I think it took, like, Vince, like, a year to learn his name. Vince is up front doing his thing, and I remember somebody interviewed him and said, who's that guy that plays drums for you? He goes, oh, yeah, Dana found him. he didn't even know his name. It was like, all right, you know, but he knows him now.
I always had this, like, bit about Brett Favre, like, not knowing the names of his, like, teammates. Like, he would just call him Big Guy and Shooter and stuff like that, you know. that maybe Vince is like that. Hey, what's up, buddy?
Right, yeah. No, or, yeah, that's Dana's friend.
Yeah.
Dana's friend.
Hey, you're the guy with Dana hangs out with, yeah. Hey, the Monsters of Rock Cruise just wrapped up. Were you on it this year? You've done it a few times, right?
Yeah, I've done, I think this is my sixth. So, yeah, it was really cool as usual. It's the best party of the year. It's completely insane. And, you know, it's the one place in the world where I'm like, you know, I'm like Channing Tatum on that cruise. You know, everybody on there knows me. I'm like the hot chick on the boat.
Oh, God.
You know. Everybody wants to buy you drinks, but, you know, then
nice.
I get home and I go to Olive Garden and I get no extra breadsticks or anything, you know.
You gotta ask, can I get more salad?
Yeah, hey, could I used to do that metals. Never mind. I'll pay for the breadsticks. Fine.
Yeah, I think we talked about it last time you were on. You mingle. You're a man of the people on the cruise, right?
I love it. Yeah, man, because this is what happened. Like, look at, we've been on the phone for at least a half hour already, and we're just having a conversation, and so I get into it with people. Like, you know, we start talking about stuff, and then the next thing you know, like, an hour went by, and you're like, oh, shit. All right, I got to go watch a band, you know. That's going on all day, too, you know, and I don't want to miss bands either.
I only ask because I have a bit of a relationship with him, friends, I should say. Ron Keel, did you catch up with him at all?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I came in, you know, Ron and I were on the bus to the port together, and then on the way to the airport afterwards, and, yeah, of course, I saw him on the cruise. He was with his girl, and, yeah, I introduced Keel one night, and they played up on the pool stage, I think the first night or second night, and, yeah, I've known Ron for a few years, and he's a great dude, and, it's cool to see him doing his thing. And, you know, he's kind of veered off and done some different stuff over the years. And but I'm always glad that he returned back to Keel, man. And yeah, that guy can still sing like a mofo, man.
I was just going to say that. We were talking about people who can still do it, man. I've seen a bunch of his shows recently, and, man, he can deliver.
No doubt.
Well, let's get to your latest release here, Denim and Leather. Now, are you running out of records that are Denim and Laughter that have the word leather in it that you can slop in laughter?
That wasn't on purpose. That was me drinking wine with Biff Byford, the singer from Saxon, and just sort of in a silly, buzzed mood. I was like, I'll call my next album Denim and Laughter, and and then he liked the idea so much, it just stuck, and nice. They were cool enough to let me use literally the exact same artwork and everything, and I just changed the lettering around and replaced his head on the back on the motorcycle with my head.
I haven't seen the back of the album cover yet, so that's what the album, well, you just described it, so I'll have to check that out.
Well, on the back, they're on the Denim and Leather, they're all on.
Right,
on
no, I'm familiar with their cover, I'm like, but I right. haven't seen yours. Because you did the same type of thing on Hellbent for Laughter, where you kind of just recreated that album cover with your face.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I'm just stealing people's logos and artwork and making it my own. So
nice.
I haven't been sued yet.
Well, you know, you're a comedian. It's parody.
Well, yeah, but I wouldn't mind if somebody sued me. I could use the publicity.
I just interviewed Donnie V, and there was a little bit of back and forth about, like, whether or not they were going to set it up, and there were things they didn't want me to ask, and, like, and I'm talking to his publicist or manager or something like that, and I probably will cut this out of the interview, but probably not something he wants me to share. I'll just tell you, but it was kind of funny. He was like, you don't want to be deposed, do you? And I'm like, I thought about it. I'm like, well, I'm not really sure what that means, but, yeah, probably good for a show if I got dragged into some kind of legal shit.
Exactly. Think how good that's going to be for Cobras and Fire if you're, like, embroiled in the middle of this whole thing. I'm thinking of suing that Roundup thing for giving me Hodgkin's lymphoma, you know, just so I could get a little exposure out there, man.
Oh.
Right, you know, everybody's suing that Roundup thing, that weed killer
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, yep. You just want to get in on that?
I might join in on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might, but I don't think that's good karma, because luckily I'm never had cancer, but certainly we know a lot of people. All of us know people who have been affected
right,
by it.
No.
But anyway, bad joke.
I think people knew where you were going with there.
Yeah.
You know, there is kind of that talk about, like, how comedians, you know, we're so politically correct now. I hope I'm right, but my gut feeling is that we are really not that politically correct. It's just that there is a vocal minority that seems to want to have something to fucking say about everything, and then every goddamn Yahoo News or MSN wants to run with these headlines. It's like, local man says upset over something Don Jameson said. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, God. I mean, you said it perfectly. I agree 100%. And that's why, you know, I put my albums out. I do what I want on there. You know, one of the tracks, you know, a bunch of the album. In fact, the theme of the album is this PC society that we live in and how we need to avoid it. So, it's a very vocal minority, like you said. And then what happens is, you know, then people kind of go, oh, well, I guess I could kind of see their point. And then they start, and it's like, no, don't think about it. You know, it's like, if you already laughed at it, you can't come back later and go, no, I didn't like that. You know, there's got to be a statute of limitations on fake outrage. Like, if you don't complain in the first 24 hours, then you have no case. Your case is
I think you're giving them too much time. I'm like, I think you got 10 seconds. If by the end of you laughing out loud, you haven't gone, oh, fuck, that is horrible, then move on. Especially if it's a comedian.
The best thing about being a comedian is making people laugh at things they wouldn't normally laugh at, and then catching themselves and then laughing again. That's the best thing ever, and you could see it. You know, I performed last night at this casino near me, and and these two women in the front row were a little older, a little more conservative, and I caught them a bunch of times laughing at stuff that I could tell they wouldn't normally laugh at, and that made my whole night. I didn't even care if anybody else was laughing. And so when people are sitting there with their arms folded and they're like, you know, waiting to be triggered, stay home. Just stay home.
Absolutely. And by the way, yeah. It's okay to be offended and find it funny, too. I mean, that can happen.
Oh, absolutely, for sure. Yeah, again, you know, great point. I'm lucky I kind of have an audience that knows what I do. That doesn't mean I don't want new people all the time to join in with the fun. But, you know, I couldn't change and do something completely different because for the people who already like me, they kind of know what they're going to get with me, you know. And also I think my writing has gotten stronger because, you know, I know where we are. I know how the times are with people's sensitivities. And so I can make the same kind of jokes, make the same point, and then also give it another layer where I'm also giving the middle finger to the politically correct douchebags that are out there.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and there is a balance. I mean, there are things that you probably aren't, like, you know, there are probably not a whole lot of cancer jokes that are going to be funny, like you were just talking. But the point being, you shouldn't hold back. I don't know. I've always enjoyed what you do. My favorite comedians are always ones that kind of put you on edge a little bit and that kind of, like, maybe make your gut tingle a little bit when they hit you with a joke. You know, like, you're kind of going, oof. You know, I mean, that's the kind of the stuff that I really enjoy. Or I also kind of like the Andy Kaufman thing where it kind of makes you just uncomfortably, like, awkward. You know what I mean?
Well, I think tension's, you know, a crucial part of doing comedy. So, I definitely agree with all that.
Well, let me just ask you real quick on the as far as doing the stand-up, because you've done it for so long. Do you approach it the same way you did, like, I don't know, 10, 20 years ago before you were doing the middle show, that kind of stuff? Or is it because you've kind of gotten more known for, you know, being that guy, Don Jameson, who loves metal? Are you a little more keyed in on the music side of stuff? Do you approach it much different as all?
No, I don't approach it any differently. You know, when I perform on 10 at all times, you know, whether there's 5 people in the crowd, 10, 1,000, you know, 2,000, doesn't matter. I give the same show. So as a performer, no. But yeah, as a writer, obviously, again, you know, I do adjust with the times. You know, I
coronavirus.
You know, the whole next album is going to be all about the coronavirus. You know, I know what my audience wants. And what they need. So, you know, but no, as far as, yeah, I did definitely talk more about rock music in my act than I used to, because it was just sort of one of these things. And I was talking to Brian Posehn about this. It's like, you know, we're always sort of afraid to kind of bring that up in front of a comedy club, because it's like, oh, well, who's going to know about this band or that band? And you just sort of realize everybody knows who Ozzy is, everybody knows who Black Sabbath are, and everybody knows who Twisted Sister are. And then you start, you know, and then for the bands that I do bits about that people wouldn't know, like Gwar, I describe them. You know, I say they wear monster costumes on stage, and they decapitate each other with chainsaws, and so I paint the picture of it. But, you know, if you're a comic, you need to talk about your life, and if music, and especially hard rock and metal, are such a big part of my life, how do I not talk about it on stage? So, you know, to me, denim and laughter is that perfect combination of, you know, for the people who see me in nightclubs, they're getting my nightclub back. And for the people who see me out on the road opening for bands, they're going to see that's all in there too. So it's kind of, like I said, the perfect combo for me.
And being a metal fan, it's got to be really cool to be on Metal Blade Records, right? Are you the only comic on their label?
Well, there's three of us. It's me, Florentine, and Brewer. So, yeah, obviously, that, you know, I was the first comic signed at Metal Blade. It's a huge part of why I even put any comedy CDs out, to be honest with you. You know, I was just always wanted, I was like, I want to put out an album, but I wanted to be, somehow I wanted to be special. And then, you know, I was going out starting to open for bands, and I opened for this band, Charred Walls of the Damned, that's on Metal Blade, and Brian had come out, Brian Slagle, the owner, And he's like, man, he goes, I haven't seen a comedian open for a band in forever, man. That was great. He goes, if I don't know how much material you have, but if you have enough for an album, let's do one. And I was like, that's what I was missing.
The hot rumor on the street is that you are on the wish list to come to Rockin' Pod in Nashville this summer. Is that correct?
Yeah, in fact, you know, I'm glad you reminded me because I have to get back with them. I think I can actually now fully confirm with them, so I'm really excited to.
First scoop. Can I go with it? I'm just gonna like you're confirmed for Nashville Rockin' Pod. I have absolutely no authority, but I am close to the people who run it.
Well, here's what you can say. Here's what I'll give you. You can confirm that I said I was probably going to confirm with them.
There's my blabbermouth headline.
Yeah, that's your big break there.
Thanks a lot, Don. I really appreciate that. Yeah, you can't believe how big that's going to help the show. Well, hey, you know, actually, I hope you actually do end up out there because we'll see you there if you do. But let's get back to Denim and Laughter. It's already out, right? You're saying there's going to be a vinyl pressing coming soon?
Yeah, exactly. So a couple months for that. You know, the vinyl takes a little longer to get out there in the world. And then the physical CDs, you know, you can come and get at my gigs. But other than that, you know, Apple Music has been a great supporter of the album, and I thank them. And, of course, iTunes with the downloads and all that. So, you know, download it, stream it, whatever. Come grab it at a show, and, you know, we'll end up probably sitting around talking like you and I for an hour after the gigs. That's usually what happens.
I wanted to ask you with you know, kind of everything kind of going towards streaming with everything with music. We talked to a lot of artists, obviously, on this, but you're the first comic I've had a chance to kind of is that a good thing for comedy as far as records and that kind of thing? Does it benefit you maybe more than music, or is it like kind of weird? Or
no, it's just it's just the way it is. I mean, nobody has a choice. You know, musicians, comics, you know, anything you put out now, it's, you know, 80% of the sales is, or people are buying, you know, air. Basically, so I can't be against that. I do my albums with rock packaging. You know, this is my fourth one. They're all, you know, the packaging is all based on bands that I love. And so for people who are like you and I, who like that, and that's, you know, it adds a little extra humor to it and obviously some nostalgia, that's great. But you don't have to know that this, you know, this is a Saxon album, a parody of a Saxon album, to enjoy the material.
Right.
I always prefer the physical stuff. And to be 100% honest, I'm paying for all the vinyl to be made because I don't care if I sell one of them. I just want my album out on vinyl. So if I have a whole box of vinyl sitting in my house and I don't sell any of it, that's fine.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm down for one. I'll make sure I'll pick one up. But are you a vinyl collector?
Yeah, I haven't bought a CD in 10 years. Just only vinyl, which is, I don't have a lot of addictions, Baco. So I spend a lot of money on vinyl. That, you know, that's not a bad vice to have. So
no, it'll probably actually be worth more down the line as opposed to most addictions.
Well, and it's crazy too, man, because I do it for the love of it. And I'm trying to, you know, you try to find original pressings, and oh, I found a German pressing of AC/DC Power Age, and, you know, I got a Spanish version of Spanish pressing of Rainbow Straight Between the Eyes, and I love all that aspect of collecting. But, you know, I also log all my albums into an app called Discogs, and that sort of gives you an idea.
I was just going to ask you that. Awesome.
Oh, dude, and it's amazing. Like, I'm like, wow, I have that, you know, like, I have a, you know, a giant pile of money in my house, like, that I didn't realize, you know, how much some of this stuff is worth. So, that's, you know, at some point, I don't have any kids, and I never will, so I got nobody to hand this off to. So, you know, I don't know where it's going, but
I literally told my wife last night, all you need is my Discogs login information when I die, and then you'll know how much money you can get for which of my records are worth anything. You know what I mean? You don't have to like just sell them for bulk for $50 or something. You can get, you know, actual value. But
Yeah, my will is on discogs.com.
Yeah, no shit. Yeah, I have a Kiss collection in storage tubs, and then my vinyl.
There you go. Well, what else would a woman want?
Exactly. I mean, apparently me. She married me, but we'll see how long that holds up. All right. Well, hey, Don, you've been more than gracious with your time at this point. The record, Denim and Laughter, is out and available everywhere right now, coming out on vinyl soon. I encourage all our listeners to pick up a copy of that vinyl so Don doesn't get stuck with, a few hundred thousand or whatever these things in his basement. But anything else we need to pitch here besides the fact that I broke the story, you're coming to Rockin' Pod?
I think that's it, man. And the honesty, I've been doing press for 3 weeks. This is the funnest interview I did, man. So thanks a lot for, I've been on the phone a lot in the last 3 weeks. You made this a lot of fun, man. I appreciate it.
Well, I can't tell you how much that means to me, but I really hope we catch up with you in Nashville. I think you sound like a guy that it'd be fun to share a drink with. So
we shall have a coronavirus-curing beer together.
All right. All the best, Don. You have a good night.
You as well.
Rock and roll! Baby gets tired, everybody knows. Your mama tells you, baby, I should show you, yeah. Let me go. Cause baby's got a feeling, baby wants to show.
You know, we actually, a couple years before that, you were in Minnesota and we met briefly. But, it was more like a handshake on the way out. I picked up a copy of Denim and Laughter and not that new one. I'm sorry. Hellbent for Laughter. You were in New Hope,
cool.
Minnesota at some, I can't remember the place anymore. My daughter was a teenager in high school at the time and she used to watch that metal show with me once in a while. So we went out. And,
oh, that's awesome, man.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.